Welcome everyone to another episode of the Dying Sports Podcast on the Dying Sports Podcast Network. Had a bit of a longer break than usual between episodes because we were busy launching our newest podcast to join the network, the Dynasty League Podcast, and that is circling around all things fantasy football related. So that just launched. That'll be recording once a week. It'll be available for download across all major podcast platforms on Tuesday morning. So if you've got a standard fantasy football league, most of your waiver wires open up on Wednesday. So hopefully that'll be there ready to go for you to get in those claims and hopefully lead you guys towards some fantasy football glory. So that just released this week. Also, brand new partnership that we are thrilled to announce here on the podcast across all of our podcast platforms and at DynesPressBox.com. We are now aligned with Fanatics. So if you need a new jersey, a new hat, a new t-shirt, any kind of new swag for your favorite football, baseball, hockey, whatever team, Fanatics has you covered with officially licensed gear and memorabilia on their site. Head over to DynesPressBox.com and just click on the shop tab at the very top of the website. While you're there, peruse a couple articles, why not? And the shop tab will take you directly to the Fanatics website, pre-populated codes and everything, depending on when you log in and where you are situated and listening to in the world. They've got all sorts of great deals going on all the time, everything from 50% off to free shipping and more. All the latest gear following the NHL drafts, NBA drafts, all the stuff that you can't get anywhere else, probably not even in the team stores quite yet, you can find at fanatics.com. So head over to DynesPressBox.com, smash that shop button, and get taken straight to the Fanatics website where they will take very, very good care of you. Today, we've got a phenomenal episode. We are going to be talking with Brandon and Ross from the Locked On Senators podcast. They've been on before. We've been on their show. So this sort of completes the trilogy between the two shows there. And we're going to be talking all things Ottawa Senators because it is a very interesting time in the franchise. They've got a lot of options at their disposal, lots of cap space. Whether they decide to actually use some of that cap space is the subject of much debate on Sens Twitter these days. And I don't think there's been a free agent that they haven't been linked to on Sens Twitter. Whether those are actually going to materialize in real life or not is another thing entirely, but definitely creating a lot of buzz out there. And then of course you've got some pending RFAs in Drake Batherson, Brady Tkachuk, and more that we want to see get done as well too. So lots to discuss with them. But before we get to them, want to give a massive, massive shout out to the Canadian women's soccer team capturing gold over Sweden this week. Massive victory, and not only just impressive that they even made the finals for the first time in team history, but the way they performed and the way they bounced back, because, you know, being down 1-0 early against a team that historically they haven't had a lot of success against Team Sweden, and very strong, well-coached, disciplined team over there. So the fact that they were able to hang in there and really weather the storm early on, it didn't look good in that first half, but definitely regrouped at halftime, circled back, and pulled together to complete one of the bigger moments of the Olympics, I would say, in terms of Team Canada's performance. And I think especially following that big victory over Team USA and, you know, the Megan Rapinoe comments and all of that. So not being the greatest loser in the world over there. Obviously, these high-end athletes never like to lose, but I think some of those comments that she dropped were a little bit unnecessary. So that's just a little chef's kiss, cherry on top for Canada to go out there and get gold after back-to-back bronzes at the last two Olympics. Christine Sinclair, like, what more can you say about her? This is just the absolute pinnacle of her career, and so well deserved too, after over 300 caps for Canada internationally. I think it's 187 goals for Team Canada. She's been there, done that, done it all. Already two bronzes in her collection, add a gold to it. What a way to cap off a truly remarkable career. And, you know, hats off to you, Christine Sinclair, and the entire Canadian women's team there. Stephanie Labbe in nets, unbelievable performance, save after save after save. And, you know, just the demeanor she had bouncing around on that goal line during those penalty kicks. I mean, you've got an entire country holding their breath and at the edge of their seats, trying to not have a heart attack as the shootouts are going on. She just looks calm, cool, collected. So hats off to all of them. Super well-deserved, especially after everything they went through in the London Olympics and the debacle that was, the referee call, you know, whatever archaic rule they invoked there that I've never seen invoked and never seen called since. But lo and behold, in an Olympic semifinal, they decided to call it. And obviously, that was a bronze that a lot of Canadians thought should have been a silver or gold. That was something that they felt was taken away from them. So this is really just a tribute to all the work that Team Canada has put in. And I mean, Christine Sinclair in her interviews afterwards went on about how look across Canada and there's no real women's professional leagues. Like these women that are playing on Team Canada's national team, by and large, are going south of the border teams and playing in the States. They're going across into Europe. They're having to play internationally all over the place. There's nowhere for them to really hone their skills at home. And, you know, she had the comment of, if we're not going to invest in professional women's sports now, after the success they've had of bronze, gold, like when is it going to come? And it's so true. So absolutely thrilled for them. Phenomenal performance. I know whether you're a diehard soccer fan or you just happen to tune into it because it was the gold medal game, you can't help but walk away impressed with what they had going on there. So all that to say, kudos to you, Team Canada, performance of the Olympics so far. And with the flag bearer for the closing ceremonies probably getting named any minute now, who knows, maybe it'll end up being one of those women who just captured gold on the Canadian women's soccer team. Now, without further ado, let's get right down to it. We've got Brendan and Ross from the Locked on Sens podcast talking all things Ottawa Senators. Joining us on the Dine Sports podcast today, I feel like it's the trilogy here. We've had one on our show. We've had one on your show. This is the third part installment of the Locked on Sens boys coming in to talk all things Ottawa Senators hockey. Brandon and Ross, how are you boys doing today?
Fantastic. Thanks for having us, Kyle.
Going well.
Anytime. Great having you guys back on there. A little bit quiet on Sens front lately. I feel like our lovely GM Dorian tweeted out that it was past his bedtime a few days ago there and that he was shutting her down for the day, and we haven't heard from him since. So is he, number one, awake? And number two, what have you guys even just been hearing as far as the million and one balls that are in the air, especially when it comes to some of our favorite RFAs in Senators land these days?
Well, definitely he's not done, that's for sure. And I mean, he even stated as much, right? Like when he traded Dadonov, he said, we are going to use that salary in future NHL roster player. He did say that. Now, he left it open-ended when or who or where. He left that pretty open, but there is an anticipation that Dorion is going to make some more moves. And even to a lesser extent, Kyle, Ross and I did a projected lineup for Belleville, and even though they did some good work in free agency, getting some AHL veterans, there's still some holes that need to be filled in that roster, and you need some extra bodies as well. So I don't think they're done by any stretch of the imagination. Now, when it comes to rumors and what's going on, it's all quiet on the Brady Tkachuk front, unfortunately. There's a couple other RFAs that still need to get done. So internally, there's definitely some work that will be announced coming up ahead here. And then externally, I think the only things we've really been hearing about is Ottawa's interest in a guy like Ryan Strome. Lots of Sens fans seem to think that the Senators are going to make a wild trade for Jack Eichel. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it'll be a much, well, I shouldn't say much more minor move, because Ryan Strome would still be a big move and you would have to move some decent pieces to acquire him. But I think this offseason is going to be a little bit more sleepy than Senators fans hope. And as far as Ross and I and you as well as content creators, we would hope there's a little more action as well. But it's coming. Let's just say that. It is going to come here eventually.
And Ryan Strome's entering the final year of his contract. Another name Sens have been linked to who has some more term would be Christian Dvorak out of Arizona. It seems like he's a guy who's going to be on the move. And Arizona's just loaded up with second-round picks. So you wonder if they're kind of at their quota of draft picks and if they want more younger prospects, which Ottawa has a bounty of. So I think that could be an interesting piece, that if Ottawa is trying to strengthen up the middle, that he'd be a guy that they'd have their eye on.
Yeah, Arizona's seemingly trying to turn themselves into the Oklahoma City Thunder of the NHL and just load up on every pick known to mankind. But our friend Simmer over at TSN 1200 nearly set the Sens Twitter sphere on fire the other day when he alluded to the fact that Brady might actually be waiting to sign his RFA contract until he sees what
Melnick and company bring in with that weaponized cap space, and as Melnick's 5 years of unparalleled success that he alluded to all those years ago. Well, we're in that window now, so we certainly haven't spent to the cap yet. Do you see them making any kind of splashy acquisition, or do you think it's going to be sort of a slow build of, we've got the cap space, we'll maybe acquire some pieces this year, maybe pick up another one at the trade deadline, and then next year we slowly, gradually creep towards that cap space, as opposed to all at once, we're 2021, let's spend right to the NHL cap.
Yeah, I'm also willing to give a bit of a mulligan with the pandemic. We can kick it down to 2022 to spend to the cap, that whole thing. But I don't think it's really smart to do it right now, because all your internal pieces, you're going to have to pay them in due time as well. Like Josh Norris is up after next season, the year after it'll be Tim Stützle. Like, what kind of contract is he going to get coming off his entry level? So there is a lot of pieces that you're going to have to juggle internally as well, but they do still have to acquire talent, no doubt. I think that DJ Smith has been pretty honest and open that it's all about creating competition and, you know, earning that spot. Well, I would argue that the roster that finished last season earned the chance to start this year together. They're the second hottest team after the trade deadline. And think about how many teams spent assets to load up. Look at the Toronto Maple Leafs at the trade deadline, giving up a first, a 2/3. They got Rittich and they got all these depth pieces. Ottawa had a better record after that than them. So I think it'd be a shame. We talk about these centers that could come in and Strom or Dvorak, but that's going to push out Shane Pinto, who I thought looked fantastic in his first 12 NHL games. Now, if it pushes out Chris Tierney, like whether he's included in that trade or whatnot, then we can have a different conversation about it, because Tierney was a healthy scratch in the final game of the season. So if you're just going to make yourselves better like that, sure. But if you're going to take away opportunity from a guy like Pinto or some of the other guys, like Logan Brown needs waivers this year. Like, what the hell is going to happen with him? That's a real question that was circled last year in training camp, but now we're circling it twice because, well, how many times can we say the season was pretty much lost with injury for him? He would be claimed on waivers. You have to think so for no assets, and you can take a chance on when he's in the lineup. He's been a good player, especially at the AHL level. So I think that spending the cap, it will come, hopefully. Maybe I shouldn't say the word will. Let's hope that it comes in due time, but right now, with the growth and the slow build that they've been able to acquire with these prospects and having 10 picks in the 2020 draft and already having three of them contribute in the organization, four if you include the seven games that Ridly Gregg played with Sokolov and even Yarventi. So that's five pieces from last year's draft who have already played in the organization. I think that in itself is a huge piece of pride that Trent Mann can hang his hat on. And it just shows like the pieces are coming. And then once they're ready, and I think maybe that's towards the deadline, as you pointed out, Kyle, or even next summer, then you can start looking at, hey, how are we going to make this two levels higher than they were before?
And you just touched on a couple of them there. Obviously, Sokolov, JBD, Pinto, you know, got Logan Brown. So we've got some question marks as far as, okay, are they AHLers? Are they full-time NHLers? You look at that crowded blue line where Ottawa's now got quite a few defensemen under contract. And is there going to be a move there? Is Brännström being dangled as a piece to get traded? Like, who are you sort of seeing as the players that are going to have to earn their spots again versus, hey, we liked what we saw in our small sample size in 2020, and come opening night, you're going to get every opportunity in the world to prove that you are a full-time NHLer?
Well, we saw Artem Zouf proved it in a hurry, eh, Pilsy, with just coming in once he was a healthy scratch at the start of last season. That feels like so long ago. And when you think about the amount of time Ottawa's gone without games, like 56 games in like the last 515 days. Like, oh my God. But hey, they made the most of it in that last stretch. I'd say on the blue line for me, I'm hoping Brännström's right beside Artem Zouf. Again, right where they ended off last season. I thought Mete stabilized Josh Brown quite a bit. So where does Delzotto and Holden fit into all this? I have no idea. I'm excited as you are for training camp. Like, Zaitsev, they seem to like him with Shabbat. I like him as a player, but maybe not as much with Shabbat. And Zaitsev actually played his best hockey this season, I thought, at the end of last year, including that goal and assist performance in the finale. And that was playing with Eric Brännström. So maybe that's a pair that you see going into next season. I just think that it's crowded, no doubt. But I'm going to kind of take a step back with Nick Holden. I think he can be an okay defenseman, but I think that we're starting to see kind of the Braden Coburn curve, where he was a great big defenseman for a lot of years, put up some offensive numbers at different parts of his career, but now he's 34. Like, how much can you realistically expect from him? And did Ottawa acquire him because they really liked him? Or was it just helping Vegas get some money off the book to not retain salary for an extra year on Evgeny Dadonov? So to me, initially, it looks like Delzato will be higher on the depth chart than Holden, while his contract would dictate that too. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see Nick Holden on waivers if he doesn't have a good camp.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, we're looking at contract situations here. Like, Ross and I mentioned, like, we want to see Brännström at the NHL level. He's ready. There's not much more he needs to prove at the AHL level. But he's one of the guys that can be sent down without waivers. And all these other guys they have, other than JBD, who we anticipate is going to start the season in Belleville anyways, they need waivers to clear. So, yeah, are you comfortable with losing a guy like Nick Holden through waivers? Probably. But also, that decor needs veteran experience. Like, you'd like to have a guy who is seasoned in the NHL that can kind of help these young guys get through the grind of an 82 game season. Cause last year it was a grind because it's a COVID season. You're only playing North team divisions. You're playing the same team four nights in a row kind of thing. But an 82 season grind where you're traveling and there's much farther road trips and stuff like that, that's a whole different animal. And it's good to have some veteran leadership on the back end to help those guys. But at the same time, like, we can't see a full season of Brännström in the AHL just because of contract situations. Like, he's ready to prove himself in the NHL. And with a guy like Zub beside him, I think he can do great things. So definitely we'd like to see Brännström get that opportunity.
9 defensemen played over 5 games for the Sens last year. So you have to
short season.
Like. Yeah. So you have to, like, Christian Willanen played 15 games. Like, that feels like a lifetime ago. And then you go up and down the list. So I think that having that depth is a good thing, but there's no taxi squad. At least I don't believe there is next year. So you're going to have to find places for these guys to play. And would a veteran like Nick Holden, now there's only two players on this Ottawa Senators team, 4 defense goalies who have played over 500 NHL games. That to me is a wild stat. And number 1 is Delzato at 710. And Nick Holden's in 2nd at 513. So then you're looking at Chris Tierney as the 3rd most seasoned NHL player on this roster. And I think he had, 2 years under his belt when he came to Ottawa? Like, that's, to me, that's where this team is just youth personified, no question.
With our friend Eric Brännström there too, obviously the rumor mill is in full force, especially with how quiet it's been. It's, oh, well, is it quiet because they're working on a big deal to go out there and get the dream scenario of an Eichel or a Matthew Tkachuk or whoever they've been linked to. But is Eric Brännström the type of player that you guys could realistically A, part with, knowing that he's so young, just scratching the surface, and was such a key part of that ultimate return when we shipped Mark Stone out of town and all of that? Is he someone that you would be comfortable passing on if you acquired a high-end bona fide NHL, whether it's that number 1 center that Melnick was targeting or a top 4 defenseman or whatever they end up bringing in? Or do you think it's just too early to give up on this kid, especially given what we shipped out to acquire him in the first place?
Yeah, I really do think it's too early because I think you need to put it in context, right? Like, first off, we know he's a smaller defenseman. So right away, small defenseman, no matter what age or experience you are, you're going to have a different struggle in the NHL than a bigger defenseman or even a bigger forward. Like, if he was a small winger, then yeah, maybe you're like, all right, we gave him the chances. He's highly touted. He hasn't panned out yet. Let's move on from him. Let's use him as a big trade bait. But since he's a small defenseman and he's so young, I don't think it's fair to move on from him so soon. Like, we joke about this all the time on Locked On Senators podcast, but the guys in the room in Belleville nicknamed him the Branchise. Like, you don't get that name just casually. They're saying he's a franchise defenseman and they've seen what he can do at that level. Now he's a little bit older. He's got some more NHL games under his belt. Let's see what he can do at the NHL level. And I think he's going to turn into a great player. And there's still, with DJ Smith, it's probably not going to happen, but there's still the opportunity for him to play the right side, which Brännström has stated he prefers or is at least comfortable being on the right side. So that's kind of an ace up your sleeve because we anticipate Jake Sanderson is going to be a top four defenseman, obviously, but maybe even surpasses Thomas Chabot one day. So Brännström's not getting ahead of Chabot or Sanderson. So you don't want him as a left shot defenseman on the third pair. So possibly he goes to the right side, and then you've got the makings of a pretty good top four D pair if they all turn out to be how they're projected. So with Brännström, I'm not at a point yet where I'm comfortable moving him, because it kind of seems like a lottery ticket at this point, right? Like, either he could turn into an amazing defenseman and you're like, oh man, we undervalued him and sold him at a low price, or it doesn't end up working for him and either you've held on to him or you've moved on and then you're happy. So it's just, this is a pivotal season for him. So I think after this season, we can really get to see his true colors in the NHL, hopefully. And then I could get talked into making a decision whether to trade him or keep him. But for now, the book has not been written on Brännström, so I'm not ready to move him.
So 2017 draft, Kyle, but then you dig a bit deeper, and he was born September 2nd. So he was one of the youngest players in that draft class, and Brady was one of the oldest in his. He's 2 weeks younger than Brady Tkachuk. So sometimes I think they just see the draft class, and they're like, oh, he was drafted 4 years ago. Like, let's get a roll on this thing. But being one of the youngest players in that draft class and one of the smallest as well, he's developing. That's just it. Like, for me, if we're going more kind of micro into what his game needs to improve, I think his shoulder checks when he's coming back to get pucks, he needs to have like a secondary out move, because he gets hit hard and he gets hit hard often. And he needs to fix that to be able to excel at the rest of his game. Or else when you get into a playoff series, like we saw with Colorado, like Samuel Girard, great defenseman, but he got hit all the time. And then he was just taken out of the game. And once that happens, Ottawa's building a team that's going to do that to other teams, but you have to protect against having that done to you. So if he can get his escapes better behind the net, and that's another reason, like, pardon me for going into my dialect about Joey Decord and losing him, but that guy is so good at playing the puck to his defenseman that he makes those plays so much easier. So that's a bit of a shame in itself, but he's the guy who told us about the franchise. So we do have to give our stick taps to Dax on that one. But if Brännström can fix that little part of his game, like, he defends hard. Like, yeah, there was a goal, especially against Calgary. I remember Pilsy and I kind of look at each other like, oh man, where he just got pushed right out of the way and then they tapped it in back door. But I think for the most part, he's pretty strong on his stick in front of the net, and he doesn't play like a 5'9 defenseman. If he can just, you know, be a little bit smoother out of those, like, turn, because once he gets the puck and he's going up ice, he's hard to stop. So I would not give up on him. Like, let's look at points per game. And I know that's not everything for a defenseman, but he's better than Chabot at his age. So, I mean, like, where's the line being drawn here? Is it just because he's been so exposed to the North American game as he came over right after his drafts? This guy was 18 playing in the AHL. So you think like, oh, this guy's been in the AHL for 3 years, let's go. But it's not all linear. So I think that this is going to be a great opportunity for Brännström. Let's hope, at least, because he should start with Artem Zub. And if he does, I see a 30-point year for him at least.
You just mentioned our good friend Joey Decord there. Wish him all the best out in Seattle. Are we going to see a Locked On Sens, Locked On Kraken, some sort of crossover episode there where you guys deep dive him, or what in the future?
Yeah, we're actually, Pilsy and I's schedules have been completely opposite for the last 2 weeks working back at the restaurant industry. And we Joey said he's going to come on the show with us. We just haven't been able to lock down a time. And I feel like the longer it gets, the more that he's like, well, I'm a Kraken now, like, screw you guys. But no, he's such a good dude. We're trying to make it work. But at the very least, yeah, we got to go and sing his praises on Locked On Kraken. Maybe he got a little offended when they signed Grubauer, because I thought that he was going to get an opportunity to at least be in the National League this year as a backup. And now it seems like he's a third string at best.
But they did trade Vanacek at least. So, it was kind of washed. But yeah, it definitely makes it tougher to try to pass Philip Grubauer than pass Drieger, Vanacek. Right? Yeah, and Drieger. Yeah, well, two Brampton Beast Boys too.
Hey, there you go.
Well, we'll look forward to that if your schedules ever align there. But getting back to the Senators, we've had a bit of a sample size now out of the Pierre Maguire, Pierre Dorion, two Pierres, one pod experience there. What sort of role do you guys see Maguire playing behind the scenes? Like, is he just essentially a sounding board right now, or maybe an expert set of eyes in the room to give opinions on matters? Or do you think he's maybe wielding a little bit more power within that Senators organization than people might realize right out of the gate, given the fact that he is new to the job.
Well, I think that one, he's got the respect of more people, I'd say, in the industry than maybe the fans that can pick apart everything he says. And I would say this, and I mean, he's probably got the biggest Rolodex of anyone who's in and around the National Hockey League, scouts, coaches, GMs, you name it. This guy has a contact for him. So with all of that, I think that that in itself is great just to see like what market prices are for like, oh, like you're talking trade about that guy. Like what are they asking for? Like this and that, just acquiring intel from all over the league. I think that in itself is super important. I know that, and this is just credit to Pierre McGuire. He said he wanted to stay right out of the draft, and the scouts, they've worked their tail off in a really tough year to find film on these kids. And he wanted to allow that. Remember they asked him, I think on Wally Mathot, where they're like, are you going to make any of the picks or something? He's like, no, like he was like offended that they asked that. He's like, no chance. So I think that, you know, that in itself, and I'm a big Pierre McGuire guy. Like I think that he does have extreme hockey knowledge, and say what you want about the way he approaches it. But this guy, one, he's great at talking to the media. I'm about to, I have it queued up to listen to today. He was on TSN 690 for an hour with them. So I'm excited to hear kind of the ins and outs, but he just sounds like he's excited. He's going to travel with the team too. So this guy, he's all in. He's not dipping a toe and being kind of an advisor. He is all in all the time. And I think that is so important for Pierre Dorion, who, say what you want, but his experience is fairly limited in terms of outside of the organization. I think he was a part-time scout with the Rangers, then was with Montreal for a little bit, and then ultimately landed in Ottawa in 2008. But that being said, like you're talking about Pierre McGuire, who I don't think anyone watches more hockey than him either. So I just think it's all good. And if they start adding, you know, if Branstrom's traded, I might kind of raise an eyebrow and be like, Pierre McGuire also said on Wyman thought, you always want to get bigger and you always want to get better. So that was a bit of an eye raiser for me, but you can't have 23 guys who are 6'5". So from that standpoint, let's hope that he understands that a good mix is a good thing. But all in all, I think it can only be seen as a positive. I laugh at the people who say, Ottawa, they have such a thin front office. They need to hire someone. And then they hire someone who's widely regarded as one of the most knowledgeable guys around the game, just a bit quirky. And they're like, oh, what the hell? Him? Like, come on, you can't win with those people.
Is it maybe a case of, okay, if we look at the track record, Ottawa drafting really, really well. Lots of success under the Mans and their involvement in the franchise. Trading at the professional level, maybe not the greatest track record there. And that was one of those key reasons why they brought him in. Leverage that, okay, what really is the market for some of these mm-hmm. players that we're talking about? Like, is that sort of the key role that you see him complementing towards the man's unreal amateur scouting?
Yeah, well, I'll let Pilsy take this one, but I want to hear him talk to the media more than Pierre Dorion. Like, Pierre Dorion, good GM. Pierre Dorion, not a good communicator. So if Pierre McGuire, who's been on air for how many hours, countless, endless hours, then I think that that could be a number one positive of what he brings. Pilsy, what else do you think he's got?
Yeah, well, I think you kind of hit it right on the head there, Kyle. Like, Pierre Dorion, as Ross just mentioned, he's a scout at heart. That's what he does. He scouts players. He's able to take a look at different angles. He has different things that he prioritizes than other GMs and scouts around the league. And I think Trent Mann, they have similar values that they look at. So that's a relationship that works really well. And for the Senators, the past 4 years, the most important thing has been scouting to draft and develop. You didn't need to look so much on the pro side, because the only thing you're doing on the pro side is trading away pro players for draft picks that eventually you need to scout for.
Or asking your head coach who's played for him before.
Yeah. Yeah. Who's been roommates with who here? What are we dealing with?
Tom Pyatt.
High character guys only. So, and that's where now it's time. The teardown, the scorched earth rebuild is done. There's no more pro players to deal. Like we just talked about, the veteran guys are the guys they just brought in at low risk, low term options. So that's not a thing anymore. Now it's about, all right, can we get a guy in Pierre McGuire who knows the pro guys very well in and out and has relationships with scouts, agents, coaches, all that kind of stuff. So you can better get an idea of what you're getting from these pro players. And I think that's where Pierre McGuire is going to come in and really do some help, because Pierre Dorion has been so focused on the scouting and the drafting. So he hasn't had the opportunity, and he's been stretched so thin, I assume, because, yeah, they do have a shorter front office staff, and Pierre Dorion's had to pull a lot of the weight here. So now you get a guy in Pierre McGuire who's, let's be honest too, like, he seems like he's fired up about this. Like, he's been trying to get into this type of job for years. He's interviewed for general manager positions over the years, and he wanted to make sure he was in a job that he liked, so that when he's leaving NBC, he felt good in his new role. And I think he found the role for him, and Ottawa Senators needed a guy like him. And similar to what Ross said, this is a guy who's very, very comfortable on camera. Pierre Dorion, not so much. We've had a handful of quotes, the "we are a team" quote, the interview between Boro and Eugene Melnyk. That was some of the most awkward stuff ever. So now you've got a guy who understands how to broadcast himself and his ideas to the public in a much more,
easy
digestible
to digest,
way.
Yeah,
digestible way that you're not cringing. You're like, oh, what are we doing here? So I think Pierre McGuire is going to be a great addition. We'll see how much he gets his fingers in on trades, but I would be fairly confident in saying he had a big role in the signing of Michael Delzato and being like, I know this guy, I've talked around the league. Maybe there's some question marks about him and he's moved around and his play has been kind of up and down, but I believe he's at a point in his career where he's still got some miles left. He's still got some good hockey left in him, and he can fulfill a veteran defensive role for us in this Ottawa Senators organization. So we should go after him. I believe he had his fingers in on that, and
yeah, agreed.
We'll see how it goes, right? We'll see if that works out, because Ross mentioned it seems kind of like Nick Holden as a Braden Coburn style. Well, we hope that Michael Delzato isn't giving us Eric Goodbranson vibes either, because that we saw how that went last year. So we're hoping that now with Pierre McGuire's insight, we're going to get a better crack at bringing some veterans in this time around.
And Delzato, I mean, he can contribute on the offensive end a little bit more. He's not the 40-point guy he once was when he was coming up with the New York Rangers and a top pair defenseman at that. But I also think that he's going to bring the visual or the experience of playing under such different coaches, and a lot of them at that. He's played under Alain Vigneault. He's played under John Tortorella. Like, these are tough coaches that have very good reputations around the National Hockey League. So I think at this point in his career, and he said it himself, like, he's here to help shepherd these kids along, but he's also here to play. Like, you don't sign a $4 million ticket over 2 years without being like, all right, I'm going to contribute on the ice myself. And from everything I've heard, I work with Carlo Koliakovo at 1050, and he and Delzato are best buddies. He said he's a freak in the weight room. Like, he's going to be the first guy in there. And they said that about Goodbranson and Coburn. So that doesn't mean it's going to translate to on-ice performance, but I do think it's a great example for these young kids to see the work and the grind that goes into having a 700-plus game NHL career, and one that people thought was over at 28. And he had to grind his way back and go on a PTO to Columbus just last year. And look how that ends up for him. He looked great. He was a plus player on that Columbus team. Like, that in itself, man, that you're earning a raise for that.
I think I had a cup of coffee with Delzato on my fantasy hockey team. You're Locked On Sports League there.
There so, you go.
I dipped my toe into the Michael Delzato experience. So I know what we're getting our hands on, but it wouldn't be summer if we didn't have the tale as old as time, the Ottawa Senators get a failing grade at the NHL draft from all the major media outlets and all of that. Now, they've obviously proved them wrong several times over the years now, but they definitely had a type of player that they were targeting in this draft there. And that would be fair to say. And they weren't afraid to maybe reach out and grab that player a couple spots higher than some of the prognosticators had them pegged. What did you guys just feel was sort of the vibe that they had this draft? And what did you think of the selections they ended up making as far as long-term, how they'll fit into this team?
Pilsy said I should take this one, and probably because his jaw is still on the floor. I was up in Collingwood watching the draft with him. And when they said from the U.S. national team program, we're like, all right, Chaz Lucius, let's go. No, it's Tyler Boucher. My favorite one, though, before we get into all of them, people saying like, Ben Roger, what a terrible pick. I know one of our friends, and I say this in jest, she's obviously a great scout, but Rachel Dory goes, when a team drafts someone I haven't heard of in the second round, like, that tells you something. Well, come on. This guy hasn't played a hockey game in 16 months. Like, maybe lay off. He's put on 35 pounds of muscle, and he's a 6'4 defenseman. So I just laugh at when people say that, or laugh when people are chirping from from a player they haven't seen play in almost 2 years at like the time where their body is developing over and over. So you know what? This is one of those where Trent Mann, and they said it last year, they went for quantity over quality, potentially. And in a way they didn't, but in a way they took players who they knew would step into pro hockey. Cole Reinhart, they knew that being an overager, he could play in the AHL right away. Same goes for Igor Sokolov. And I think they both impressed at that level. But besides that, they took a nice mix last year, right? Levi was kind of a project that was going to go on. Same with Tyler Cleven. But then they took guys with more upside like Roby Järventi. This year, it was big swing after big swing. And the pick I like the most, and I was on with Alex Metzger on his podcast the other day, Last Word on Sens, and he said, who's the one guy you got circled and you really want to watch his development? And, like, of course, Tyler Boucher, you're going to watch the 10th overall pick. But Zach Ostapchuk, like, nobody even had this guy in their top 75 in terms of the rankings we looked at for our pre-draft. But this guy was the most improved player in his division, matched his point totals in half the amount of games that he did in his rookie year. And he's a 6'3 centerman who can slice through defense when he's got great skating ability. So from just watching the highlights, Ostapchuk, I have circled it as my guy from this draft class. But all in all, yeah, there's no question that, all the prognosticators, they're going to say what they want. But Trent Mann, like, this guy's just been doing it for so long. I look back and it was 2011 that he was hired as a part-time Quebec League scout. Well, you know, they got in the fifth round out of the Quebec League that year. Guy named Mike Hoffman, that turned out to be pretty decent. So you go from that, and then obviously Shabbat, they got out of the queue, and he's just been able to make this portfolio of hits. And Shane Pinto, everyone laughed when they took him, and now I just told you 10 minutes ago he should be the number two center on an NHL team the first full year out of school. So you know what, in Trent we trust is kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing, but at the same time, it's not, because he's hit on so many of these prospects. And yeah, Kyle, they had a type, but then they also strayed from that for that Oliver Johansson pick. That kid is just skill, skill, skill. So I like the mix that they got, but certainly you're looking at and wondering, like, why does nobody else see anything out of these players? And I'm just waiting to see them get on the ice. Like, they drafted a kid out of Junior B, guys. Like, this guy was playing Junior B just to get on the ice. He'll play in Hamilton in the OHL next year. Chandler Romeo, seventh rounder. But I just laugh because this is such a weird year. None of the draft picks played over 22 games. So, you know what? I think that this is going to be a defining draft for Trent Mann.
Yeah, and I think the thing to look at here is this was such a weird draft. Like, the OHL didn't happen this year. That's the OHL is often one of, or if not the best talent pool of prospects in the NHL draft. And it just wasn't a thing this year. So I think you need to look at, yeah, a lot of teams, they went for guys who they were able to scout, who got full seasons in overseas or in the USHL or other places. But the Ottawa Senators, they were looking for size, and they were looking for guys, like Ross said, Ben Rodgery hasn't played in so long. They're looking for guys who maybe went under the radar, and other teams are like, well, yeah, we don't know enough about him, so we're going to go with something a little safer that we have more intel on. Well, the Sens, they zigged when everyone zagged. Everyone zagged and went, we're going for these players who played a lot. We've got intel on them. We like the video, etc. Whereas the Senators were like, we'll take the guys that you guys passed right over just because they didn't play. We'll take a chance on a guy like Ben Rodgery. If he can turn out to be a great big defenseman who's, and he's also with the London Knights. That's a great development program there. There's a lot of upside here. So yeah, initially on draft day, it's disappointing when you have to Google every single draft pick that the Sens make because you never heard of them. But the draft isn't over and said and done and graded the day after the draft. We're looking at 3 to 10 years, honestly, before we can really tell what some of these guys can do. So I'm willing to give some patience on this draft, but I will make it known, I don't know if I can ever forgive the Sens for passing on Atu Ratti 3, even 4 times, because he was a guy I really liked, and they in the second round, they had 3 opportunities to draft him. They had their pick at 39. They went with Ostapchuk, then pick at 42. They traded back. Then at pick 49, Ratti was still available, and they decided not to go for him. So that's one guy I'm probably going to follow his career closely and dream of him being in an Ottawa Senators uniform. But that's not to discredit anything from Asa Bichuk and Ben Roger. I think the book is not yet written on those guys. So there's some time.
For sure. And it wouldn't certainly be just the Senators who passed on him, because every other NHL team had multiple chances to get him on their roster. And for whatever reason, he just kept sliding and sliding and sliding. And this is a guy who was potentially going to go number one a few years ago. So look at what can change over the course of a global pandemic and not seeing these guys. And we'll obviously keep a close eye on him, but he was one as well too that I thought, okay, you took your big swings as far as the big physical players there. Let's maybe get someone with a super huge upside. And if he even scratches that surface, looks like a steal in the second round or whatever. But if he doesn't, then hey, you took a swing at a guy who had a high pedigree and didn't pan out. Like, these types of things happen. So
we're going to have Tony Ferrari back on our show. He's obviously a great prospect guy. And he replied to my DM. He just goes, it's so strange because I really like all the players that Ottawa got. I just hated where they were taken. So it's very strange. So from Ottawa's standpoint, if they really like those players as well, and they know they don't have a pick for a while, well, then you take the guy that you want. So I think that, you know, this was kind of Trent Mann swinging his might, saying like, I'm hitting on everything I've done before. They even asked him the next day, JR asked him on 1200. They said, hey, would you have been confident to make the off the board selections that you did in your first draft? And he said, probably not. But when you get a Drake Batherson in the fourth round, then you start, you know, thinking, hey, I can do this scouting thing. And maybe you didn't know Drake would grow 3 more inches after you drafted him. But that being said, I think that there's just such a track record here of success that they went like this draft is, as I mentioned, it's going to define Trent Mann, because nobody said they went on the board. Usually you get a few guys being like, oh, they were off the board on my list. Nobody knew who, like, we did a
top, us included.
We did a top 75. They took one guy off our list when they had 4 picks, and that one guy was drafted 10th, and we had him 55th. So that tells you kind of just how off the board they went. Crazy.
Yeah. All right. Well, we know you guys got to get going, so we'll just end with a couple of quick hitters, and hopefully we don't get you guys too fired up on any of these topics that you go down a rabbit hole. So just really quickly, let's get your opinions on the following things here. Batherson and Tkachuk, who gets signed first?
Pilsy.
Tkachuk. It's everything stems from what Brady Tkachuk does. Once the Senators have his salary cap structure in place, then they can start working on the other guys trickling down. But Brady's got to be the first one done, because you can't justify what you're going to give Drake Batherson until you've set the ceiling with what Brady's going to get.
Although I will say there's more comparables out there for Drake Batherson. There's Alex Tuch. There's Jordan Eberle. There's right wingers who have gone on to have pretty solid contracts and careers out of that entry level. Travis Konechny signed a 6-year $5.5 million contract. Like, I think that they could go bridge with him too, but I'll say Drake just to be different. I think that Drake should be an easier contract to get done. And I also think that when Drake gets done, if it's extra long-term, that could inspire Brady to maybe do the same.
Perfect. Logan Brown, AHL, NHL, or no longer with the Senators?
NHL or no longer with the Senators. I'll play a process of elimination here, because he needs waivers, like I mentioned, and I just don't think that he would sneak through there. Although we have seen good players sneak through, especially when everyone's trying to figure out their own rosters. Like, that's the best time to sneak someone through waivers, at the start of the year when the list is like 10 pages long at the start. But that being said, I'm going to go he gets NHL games with Ottawa, and if it doesn't work out, he'll be gone before 20 games.
Yeah, I got him on another team. I think he's the top trade bait guy for the Senators if they want to acquire NHL-ready talent. And their time is done. They've tried it. It's not working. That's just that. I think he can be successful somewhere else, and I hope he is, but his time in Ottawa has run short.
Yeah, I think if he has success with another team, you're not going to be disappointed. You're not going to say, like, if Branstrom went to another team, you'd be like, what the hell? We saw the progression, like, you gave up on him too early, like with Mika Zibanejad, like that sort of thing. But if it's Logan Brown, it's like, tip your cap, say, hey, you battled through that adversity, good for you, it just didn't work out here.
And last one here, Timmy Stützle, how many points is he putting up this season?
200. No, I'll say 25 goals and 42 assists. So what's that? 67 points?
67 points.
67 points in a full year, 82 games.
I got him at 21 goals, 20, yeah, high 20s assists. So right
now, Derek Stepan numbers.
Yeah, you got it.
Exactly. Beautiful. Yep. Well, we appreciate you boys taking the time to come on and talk all things Ottawa Senators hockey. For those that live under a rock and haven't tuned into you guys yet, where are the best places to find you guys these days?
Well, we are up and running on YouTube along with Dine Sports, so you'll love to see that. So you can go shoot us a subscription there. We do appreciate the YouTube love as that's just getting underway. Slow and steady is my video. We're still figuring out, man. Don't even get me started on that. But otherwise, you can find us anywhere you download your podcast, Odyssey app, Google Play, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts, and Send Central on Twitter.
Beautiful. Well, thanks again for coming on today, guys. Best of luck. Who knows when we'll have some more content coming out, but hopefully these quiet days on the Senators' fronts are just preludes to some bigger news leaking out maybe next week.
For sure. And we should pump Pilsy's Twitter as well, because he's the only verified guy in the room here.
Yeah, we're amongst some rarefied air here.
I know.
Regional celebrity Brandon over here. My goodness. Yeah,
I mean, it's Brandon Pillar one for a reason. I'm the number one Brandon Pillar, so that's why they had to get the verified. Too many fakers out there trying to imposter Brandon Pillar. So we got it all figured out now.
Are you the only verified Twitter account in Collingwood?
Gotta be. Yeah, not a big deal. Yeah.
Oh, man. No, we appreciate you having us, Kyle. It's always great to chat with you. And yeah, like you referenced earlier, we've got a big fantasy league coming up next year. After I sold the farm, tried to gain some draft capital, and I'm ready to get back on my horse here. So we're looking forward to that coming around the corner here. Hey, you mentioned it's a slow season. At least this is the shortest slow season that we're going to have for a long time. And I'm ready, man. I mentioned the amount of days it's been since the Sens have played 56 hockey games, and I'm ecstatic for that first preseason game. I'm going to be there in Winnipeg, September 26th, same with Pilsy. So we can't wait for that and then get the ball rolling on an 82 game season. Come on. We haven't had one of those since the Sens finished dead last. Let's go.
There you go. Have you guys already put away your little nest egg for season opener when tickets finally go on sale?
Yeah, so the play with that is I'm in the middle of a move, so I'm moving west, so it's not going to be as easy to get home. So I'm going to have to put an asterisk on the home opener per se, but being at the preseason home opener, that's a good start. And at the very least, I think that I could sneak down to Toronto for the season opener. They're on the road in TO. So yeah, if it's not the home opener, we're going to be making a few trips to Ottawa, no question about that, next year, but the pod's still going to be 5 days a week. We never quit on the team. So no, we're ready to go. We're excited about what's to come, and especially like where I'm moving might be an hour and a half from North Dakota, so I might have to go check in on our boy Sandy and the K train down there. So no, it's gonna be awesome, man. I'm sure you can't wait to get back into the building too, eh?
Oh, absolutely. We'll have to get your Twitter bio updated to Ross North Dakota Insider and get you verified.
Yeah, no Dak Ross, exactly. Yeah. That's just it.
And that's a wrap for another episode of the Dine Sports Podcast on the Dine Sports Podcast Network. As always, a huge thank you goes to both of our guests today, Brandon and Ross from the Locked On Senators Podcast. Be sure to go and check them out for the daily updates that they are pumping out there. Some real great content that they are producing. And be sure to head over to DinesPressBox.com, hit that shop button to check out all of our Fanatics deals that we've got going on team gear. Head over to MyBookie.ag and use the promo code DINESPORTS to get the friendliest wager lines on the internet if you want to sprinkle a few parlays on some of the last Olympic events that we've got going on, or MLB still in the thick of things going on there as well too. Lastly, be sure to check out the new Dynasty League podcast, which we just launched. They've got one episode under their belts already. They've got their second episode dropping this coming Tuesday. So in that first one, they covered top 10 fantasy quarterbacks, as well as previewed the NFC North and AFC North. On Tuesday, it'll be top 10 fantasy running backs you should be targeting in your leagues, as well as dark horses and sleeper picks and all of that and more. And then they'll be going through the AFC South and NFC South. So they'll be doing two divisions a week plus a positional group to get you ready for the big fantasy football season that is just around the corner. They've got some awesome promos in their Pods versus Pros promo league that they've got going on. All of it's for charity. They've got professional athletes going against some TSN folks and folks in the media and all of that. So very cool. Keep updated on that. Stay safe, everyone. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll see you in a bit.